We profile mind, body, and soul. We're not just drafting a player based on objective measurements, how fast they can run a 40, a short shuttle, a three cone test. We're looking at things from anthropometric measurements. We're looking at things from the details of what's this body athlete, what's this athlete's body type versus what's their muscle to bone ratio. What are we getting from the Dexalytics that we get from the in-body or from the body composition that we test there with DEXA? So what are some of those things? When you lump all that into one, you get a more robust profile of an athlete.
Ted Rath, thanks for your time.
Appreciate it, Jake. Excited to be here, man. Great to see you again.
Great to catch up. You have been in the league for just long enough to see a lot of change, and you've been around football for a long time, obviously. You know, in a league that might have been considered a little bit behind other sports and now definitely catching up very fast, what's happening in football today and where are you excited to see it go?
Man, that's a great question. Great one to start out with. I've been in the league 14 years now. There has been an excessive amount of change within those years, as you can imagine. Where we started and really where you look at the European model and you look at some of the things Australia's been doing for decades, the NFL was archaic. You know, when I first got into the league and you look at where we are now, we are light years ahead of where we were at that point. So number one, what's exciting is we have fully embraced not just sports science, because I think in the NFL and some American sports, sometimes that gets a bad stigma because old school coaches think, oh, you guys are just going to tell me to be less, do less, do less, do less. I just had a coach the other day. This is hilarious that you asked this. He literally said, you know what I call sports scientists and all you performance guys? Fatigue police. And I'm like, well, coach, you haven't been around the right ones. So, you know, for me, once again, it comes back to how are you presenting this information and the data? How are you getting an owner to understand it and then a football coach and then the staff assistants and then the players? It's all how you present this information. So I'm really excited what we've been able to do in the short amount of time that we've been able to do it. What excites me is how much faster are we going to be able to get even further ahead? Because I think we made leaps and bounds in 5 years, 8 years, 10 years. What are we going to do in the next decade? Where does machine learning fit into that? Where do some of the things that we're looking at where we can automate certain things? And then we're flagging guys before bad things happen, like soft tissue injuries. I'm jacked to see where we can take it because, Jake, we've done a really good job of catching up. And I think there's still, we all have a lot of room to grow, me specifically. But I think where we can go in the next 5, 10 years excites the crap out of me because, man, we're going to do some great things.
One thing that's interested me in football is an amazing example in sports of a bit of a sacred cow, so to speak, that no one would have thought of touching until data said, hey, maybe we should look at this. And that's the fourth down. And it's been controversial. You know, when I see decisions that are criticized, I often think, what information wasn't put into the model that influenced that decision? So what are some more examples of things like that that you've been working with? And what's the next one that you want to see explored?
Ooh, another great one. You know, the fourth down one's a great example. And then I think more of what you're looking at special teams wise, there's a lot of different avenues where I think the game of football we're going to be able to dive into from an analytics perspective. But also, I think just some of the average down and distances and some of the average, I'm saying average, some of the unique play calls, but really some of the standard things where you look across the league and you're starting to see some statistical trends. I think all that's going to come into question every year because it does. But over time, what does a typical third down and long look like? And what does our typical play sheet look like now defensively? How are you going to defend someone who breaks the trends and breaks the mold? So I think what we're always trying to do with analytics is get ahead of whatever the next trend curve is going to be. So for us, if it is an offensive play call system, it's when we're in this specific down and distance, here's what the averages are and here's what our trends have been for us personally within the Philadelphia Eagles or whatever team you're working with. And then how do we translate that to, all right, let's break this mold, let's break this trend. And then defensively, how do we anticipate that they're going to defend this? And then what's our counter to that? It's the ultimate chess match, right? I mean, what we're talking about with analytics, and we always say this, even with technique and some of the other things, it's the game within the game. So us playing that game from a chess perspective, we don't have to be one step ahead. We need to be 2 to 3 to 4 steps ahead, because we need to have a plan to counter whatever their counter is. And then that's that internal rhythm. So when you have a plan and you can use it from an analytically driven background, because you know that here are the facts. That's the beauty with analytics. They don't lie, Jake. You know that. So for us, Here's what it's telling us. Here's what the historical data has shown. And here's what we anticipate to happen. And then you get to throw it at the wall and see what happens. But then that's also important where you have that backup plan and you say, here's what we anticipate our counter to be, and here's what they're probably going to do, then we'll counter it this way. So I think that more than anything, down and distance stuff is going to become really unique, as we've already seen the last couple of years. The fourth down stuff is a really unique one. I think special teams wise, though, you know, extra points, going for 2 points, things like that, those are always going to be up and coming things. I think we'll start to see some more trends coming in to play special teams specifically, but especially in like those 2 point areas.
What about in talent identification and talent development? There's always an article every year about the NFL Combine and the 40-yard dash, and I think most folks are on the same page with that. But what about how do we look at college talent and figure out who's going to make it in the league?
Yeah, man, if you can answer that one, you will be a billionaire, Jake, and you can own whatever team you want.
I'm working on it.
You get 100% there. You're talking about some of the metrics that we look at from an objective standpoint. We're always going to look at them. There's some that hold tremendous value, and there are some that probably don't hold a lot of value if you look at the specific example that you gave, the combine. Now, what I would say analytics is probably going to have a deeper inroad in is some of the psychological testing and some of the mental stuff that we look at. So how do we profile athletes? We profile mind, body, and soul. We're not just drafting a player based on objective measurements, how fast they can run a 40 or short shuttle or three cone test. We're looking at things from anthropometric measurements. We're looking at things from the details of what's this athlete's body type versus what's their muscle to bone ratio? What are we getting from the Dexalytics that we get from the in-body or from the body composition that we test there with DEXA? So what are some of those things? When you lump all that into one, you get a more robust profile of an athlete. So for us, it's mind, body, and soul. It's not just how an athlete moves. And then there's subjective analysis from our coaching staff. How do you input that and how do you make that more of an objective path? And then some of the video stuff that we can overlay. I think that's one of the things that's coming down the pipeline too, is some of the video analysis. You look at some of the motion capture stuff out there available now, Jake, it's incredible. And as we continue to take steps forward, I think that's one of the things that will become a really unique trend. And that's something that the league's looking into now. I know from some of the stuff that I do for Task Force for the league, we're working on that. We're trying to get to the point, all right, how does video analysis and identification help us? Not just talent identification, injury prevention, and everything else from that. So I think you're going to see a lot of things coming down the pipeline with that too.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Ted, just before we started, you mentioned one of the biggest things contributing to this situation that you're in, where you are a really very modern organization, has been buy-in. And I think that the sports world actually isn't lacking for executives who want to be data-driven, who want to be modern, who want to be innovative. But it doesn't just happen by saying it or by thinking it or by feeling it. What has being a part of a couple of very modern and innovative organizations taught you about how that gets built?
Man, it's really fun, Jake. When I look back at my time, this is my fourth team that I've been with in the NFL. And I feel very blessed and fortunate because I've learned something so unique in each place. Because out of 32 teams, everyone does it uniquely different. There are similarities, and obviously you're going to have some of those things where you cross paths. But within the specific organization we're in now, the first thing I got to say is Jeffrey Lurie is the most forward-thinking owner that I've been around, from the perspective of, if you have an idea, there's no such thing as a bad one. Let's explore all options because it can only help us. It's the Thomas Edison. I didn't fail 10,000 times. I learned 10,000 ways not to create a light bulb. So for us, we throw a lot of ideas out there. They're not just hit to a blank board and they're like, no, pick that one. That it is, all right, let's explore all these. Let's figure out how to do it. Now with that comes an incredible responsibility, because if I show up with 10,000 ideas every year, we're not going to have enough time to invest resources in each and every one of those. So for me, being forward thinking is great, but within that comes great responsibility. So then you need checks and balances. You need the right people in place. And our management team is really unique. Howie Roseman is very forward thinking. You look at the analytics department that they have created here within the Eagles organization. It's unbelievable, Jake. And then being able to tie that in with some of the things we do from a performance perspective has just broadened and created a more robust model. So now we marry the concepts of, all right, here's our football analytics, here's our performance analytics, and then some of the medical things that we put in there just from talent identification or draftable guys. All those things come in together. And once again, we create that marriage. That only happens one way. That's true collaboration. With great communication, you can have great collaboration. So if we're not communicating on a day-by-day basis, we're not going to have great collaboration. We got the best data analyst in the world, but if it's falling on deaf ears or they can't communicate that collectively or correctly, we're ultimately probably not going to have the next step and get us to where we want to be, because you have to communicate that clearly and you have to know the stakeholders. You got to know how to communicate within different realms to different people. And I think that's one of the most important things within not just professional sports, but life. You got to be able to communicate with people, which will lead you to better collaboration in whatever environment you're in.
You touch on one of the biggest challenges that we find, that I think most people who have degrees in computer science or spend their days writing code would say that social interaction is not their favorite thing. And that's fine because they're incredibly talented in many other ways. So in sports, you often have to either find the unicorns who can do both, or you have to find a conduit who can communicate back and forth. So how has that been a part of your org or whatever you're comfortable sharing, where you don't go from just deciding you want to hire a data scientist or pay for a cloud provider and then all of a sudden have every decision driven by data? So how have you developed those communication cadences and structures and systems?
Yeah, another good question. I won't go into real deep specifics just with what we do. Obviously, there's some proprietary information there, but I'll say this. We have great people who do communicate really well on an elite level within our organization. But I'll say from a more general sense, if you're in an NFL building, you have a choice to make. Do you hire the data analyst who is probably a little bit socially awkward in some ways, is going to struggle with communication? And then do you hire someone to be that conduit, like you mentioned, and then communicate to the stakeholders or communicate up and down the flowchart, however they need to be? For me, it's don't focus on the role. Don't focus on we have to get a computer guy and then we have to get this person who does this, or male or female who can do this. Get the right person. Hire the person first, because once again, there's a relatability there. They have to be able to mesh and collaborate within our culture of whatever the organization has already established. So if you hire someone and you know you're going to need a high-level communicator, but you maybe for the sake say, well, they're really, really good here, though their technical skills are off the chart, we can make a sacrifice. It's almost similar to how we bring in players, but the player's really good, but they're not going to fit our culture. Don't bring that player into the building and expect there not to be problems. So it's the same thing for me. There has to be obviously a certain level of skill and technical skill there. But once they check those boxes, for me, it always comes back to hire the right person, because you can raise that person. You can teach that person within your processes of your unique building, your unique facility, organization, whatever it is. And you can really drive them to interact well with your people and then ultimately have success. So you got to look at it from all ends. For me, the culture makes such a difference. Jake, you got to get the right people in there. Otherwise, you're going to fail that collaboration, that communication level like we talked about.
Yeah, really important philosophy. I find that the more one can stick to that kind of approach, the more sustainable success is. I found the same in building our staff at a startup. One thing that I've learned that's very interesting about data and data-driven decisions is, like, descriptive statistics is often called analytics. And this is what happened is very different from this is what we forecast will happen. As predictive analytics has percolated into your workflow and your jobs to be done framework, what are some things that you've found have changed about how you operate in your day-to-day and how you interact with stakeholders?
Well, number one, it's made everything more efficient. I think the first thing that you looked at is as we start to get more predictive, and that's what I'll use, kind of more the predictive model, because to me, in the grand scheme of things, analytics provides us a great opportunity to be more efficient at our daily processes. There's not enough time in the day, especially in the middle of an NFL calendar, in the middle of a game week and game prep, there's not enough time in the day. So if I can save 20 minutes here, 15 minutes there, 12 and a half minutes here, ultimately, it's the theory of marginal gains, right? All that stuff adds up. And if we can get 1% more time each and every day, that is huge for us as an organization. So for me, analytics has become closer and closer and closer to that fully predictive model, where now when I log on to our in-house athlete management system and I go onto some of our pages and we're post-practice 10 minutes, all the data is already uploaded, it's already ingested, and I already have flags, bam. I'm ready to look at them. I'm ready to identify five players that I need to either go talk to personally them about a recovery or a regenerative protocol that we need to put them into, or I need to go talk to our head coach, our offensive defensive coordinator, our special teams coordinator about a specific game plan where I'm worried about a guy who just flagged, or our GM about a guy. Maybe it's talent identified. It's, hey, this guy's actually in a really good place. Here's what he's looking at. He's projecting ahead of where we thought he would be. All those things are great things. And what analytics and some of the predictive data has allowed me to do is shorten the time frame of me digging through thousands of rows of Excel spreadsheets and thousands of rows of data. And then it gives me that time back. And that time, especially in an NFL environment, in any environment, especially for you as a startup, is the same thing. Time is so valuable. And when you get that time back, because the data has gotten better and better and better, you're saving valuable assets that you really can't quantify the amount of money that you could put on that.
It's almost like they say Apple wasn't selling, you know, phones and computers. They were selling creativity, and BMW doesn't sell a car. They sell status. I think yes. Most pieces of technology around data have to sell speed.
For sure. I agree 100%.
What are pieces of information that you find yourself receiving that are more detailed than you want? And what are details and questions that you want answers to that you find that you're lacking right now, that you're excited that your staff are getting into or that are coming down the pipeline for you?
I don't think I get too much information in any one area, because for me, I'm always in the thought, give me more data. I'm never going to refuse. I'm never going to say, you gave me too much data. It's my job to filter through, and it's my job to understand what I need to look at and what I don't. Is there certain things that I look at way more in depth? Yes, absolutely. If you look at monotony and strain, if you look at acute chronic ratios, I'm diving in deeply in certain areas. I won't go into too specific things with some of the stuff that we look at, but there are certain areas where I focus on. And the first 10% of my time digesting data or looking at a report, bam, it's focused right there. And every time it's without fail. The back end, I might only get to maybe once out of every few games or few weeks, but when it's pertinent, it's pertinent. That's why I'll never turn down data, because at some point it never fails. One piece of data is going to lead me into another question. So for me, we'll take an acute chronic ratio. Okay, maybe it's in one specific one metric, one on-field metric. And then that gives me to ask another question. That next question might lead me into something specifically in the training room or the weight room with another testing modality that we use. Now I'm in a separate universe from a separate intake, and this piece of data got lumped in here. But now I have to do the job of marrying those two things together and saying, all right, object A tells me this, object B tells me this. Now, what the hell does that mean in the middle? And that's my job to understand that. But then that might also lead to another question. So once again, the data needs to be there, because in those certain situations, Jake, you got to be able to take a deeper dive. And for me, questions are great. You should always approach things with a level of curiosity, just in life, but specifically when we're talking about predictive data and data analytics within a performance environment, within a football environment, the next layer has to be there, because eventually I can't do this. I can't run into a point where I'm like, well, we have no more layers. Okay, well, what is it? And it could be subjective at that point. You bring in the athlete, you say, how do you feel? Because right now everything is pointing to this. And I anticipate you to say you feel really, really bad from a recovery standpoint or from a soft tissue injury standpoint, whatever it is. But leading me to those next questions, there has to be another layer of data there, because when I need that, and it's not often, but when you need that, it's incredibly valuable, especially if we're talking about an elite level player on our team.
Yeah. And you touched on something really important there. You know, in some contexts, we would call that feature explanation, right? Just why is something predicted to happen the way it's going to happen, or why did something happen the way it happened? It's an interesting paradox, because the more explanation you can provide, the better, and the more you can avoid black boxes, the better. I firmly believe that. No one wants to just say, hey, trust the algorithm. That's how we get into trouble. That's how we get man versus machine or human versus machine. But I think we've both been in professional experiences where the stakeholder reads the top page in the pile, and that's it. So how do you balance your own curiosity that you just described with the information that you have to transmit to the stakeholders around you?
Yeah, one of the most important and valuable aspects that you have to have as a leader, but also someone who's ultimately in charge of looking at a lot of this robust data, you have to be able to zoom out and you have to be able to zoom in. So for me, that ability to zoom out to a 30,000 feet level and look at everything, and I'm looking at things from 90 athletes with almost 30 coaches, with all these other variables and all these other moving parts, zoom out and then zoom right back into whatever focus detail you need. I think this is the thing where we've found context means more depth. So for me, as I'm looking at one thing, I could get a flag and say, we're using a specific algorithm that flags a player and it flags him correctly because the player had an acute spike in volume and on-field training day. So for me, I look at it. Okay, the first thing I ask is, what's the context around this player? All right, it's a return to play player. They just came back from rehab. Now, what that algorithm does not tell me, because it's only looking at one thing from an on-the-field perspective, it doesn't tell me what he's done in the weight room, in the training room. His last 3 weeks has been a ramp up. So for me, we haven't been on the field, but we have stressed the tissue adequately. We've put him into high energy system development training. So we know from a metabolic standpoint, he's there. There's no concerns. Accelerations and decelerations have been checked off because we've been doing eccentric training, static training, if it's a lower extremity injury. Now we look at everything that we've done to create that athlete as a resilient athlete to go out there and have that spike. If I just look at the flagging system, I'm going to say, holy crap, you got to shut this guy down for 5 days, let him recover. But in the context that I know what he's done in the last 30 days or 21 days, I know that that athlete has been ramped up progressively. I know that it's been an appropriate progression. I know they're ready to stack another training day on behind that, because that was the plan. Does that mean that we can't adapt? Absolutely not. But in that scenario, the context that I have and the opposite data sets that we have and other variables, those are critically important to understand, to know, and to be able to break down, because without that, you're probably going to falsely identify a flag in that specific scenario.
Yeah, and that comes back to one of the first things you mentioned, right? Is sometimes sports science can show, hey, we can give this player more exposure to the top speed, or we can push them and they can endure a worst case scenario on the field because we've prepared them.
We're always trying to get as close as possible to overreaching without going too far. Once again, the negative context that sports science gets sometimes, Jake, is because you guys are always telling me, no, no, no. That's my least favorite thing to say is, no, we got to pull back. We got to pull back. In the bottom of my heart, I'm a meathead football player. I want to do as much as humanly possible and then get them to that point, let them recover, and then do it again and go up to another level. So for me, having that understanding and trying to maximize every single thing that we can do, that's how you empower data. I weaponize data to make sure I can do more with our athletes each and every day, not less. I hate doing less. I want to do as much as humanly possible to get us to a championship level of performance and then take them even higher the next time. So I think that's got to be the goal. And that's in alignment with football coaches, with sport coaches. They don't want to hear less, less, less. They want to hear, how much can I do? Here's what you can do, coach. You got to spike them up. You didn't do enough yesterday. Go do more. Go.
Yeah, our best opportunity with data is to say, hey, we have all the reasons to believe we can push harder.
Yes, absolutely.
So my last question for you today is, in sports, I'm fascinated in how, and I'll use air quotes for this, analytics are perceived as finding a needle in the haystack. And it's always exciting to learn information that you wouldn't have known or seen previously. But I actually think that technology can help us confirm or refute our own biases. And I'm curious just how you've seen that balance between those two dynamics of finding things that you wouldn't know about otherwise and looking at what you think or what you think you're seeing and finding out, you know, what might be underneath that.
Yeah, I love how you said that, because I don't hear a lot of people say that, Jake. It's something I've said in the past. It's, we all have biases. For me, I have a performance objective bias. If you're dealing with somebody in the coaching staff, they have a bias based on what they think the outcome should be. Data analyst has a certain bias, and biases aren't bad in this circumstance. It's something that balances us all. Now, if you only have one side, that bias is ultimately going to overrule. That's a bad situation. So for me, I want the data to challenge me. I want data analytics or whatever I'm looking at to come in and hopefully 9 times out of 10 reaffirm what my recommendation was or what I think the outcome will become or should be. If not, then I'm a bad coach. You know, that's kind of how I look at it. So for me, Jake, it's, can you confirm or can you deny what ultimately I expect to happen if we throw these athletes into this situation? If we load them this much, I expect something to break. Did it break? Yeah, we had 3 guys pull out with soft tissue injuries and tweaks. Okay, did it not break? No, you were wrong. Well, shoot, all right, I got to go back and look at why I thought that would not be or that would be too much. So for me, I love it when I'm proved wrong. That's where we learn. And that's in the growth mindset. Data has the opportunity. Once again, data itself is not biased. That's the beauty. Analytics don't lie. It's going to show you exactly what it shows you. So for me, I want to be proved wrong every time, because that's going to help me refine my process and then get closer to that bullseye that we're all trying to hit eventually. So when it proves us right, great. You did a good job. Pat yourself on the back if you need to, but that's what we're all here to do. That's what we get paid to do. Prove me wrong so that I can get better at refining my process so that we can ultimately put the team in a better place.
I love that approach and the bullseye example. You know, recently I've been saying weathermen are wrong most of the time, but they still have a job and they still do their best to forecast the weather with the best mathematics that they have available. And I think you could say the same about, you know, injury forecasting and load management, but also, you know, no scout can look at every single player in college football. But if you put together a great list, you can use statistics to say, hey, you know, here's how this particular algorithm ranks those. And then that informs conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're all trying to get closer to the bullseye. And that's why I don't like the needle in the haystack. I don't think that's what analytics are for. Analytics are there to refine processes. Ultimately, the scouting example is a great one. There's 350 athletes there at the combine every year. Well, how can we narrow that focus? We're only going to get to draft 8 to 10 of them if you have a good year with draft prospects. So for me, how do we refine that process? And how do we not, it's not wasting time, but how do we limit the time that we spend on guys that are not going to fit our system, our culture, or whatever our analytics are telling us is our type of player? How do we remove that so that we can skip the process and get back down deeper into the guys that we really do need to evaluate?
That's so well said. I think we'll leave it there. Ted Rath, thank you for your time.
Jake, I appreciate it, man. This is fun. Thank you.
Good luck on Sunday.
Appreciate it.